9:30 on a Friday morning during the legislative session means it's time for Capital Call, brought to you this morning by Phillips 66. And we are focusing this morning on the State House of Representatives. Judd Strom in studio. Good morning, sir. How are you today?
I'm wonderful, Charlie. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's a rainy day, but it's not raining right now, so that's a good thing. And we'll see how it develops. They're supposed to forecast calls for some sunshine tomorrow and Sunday, and I will be looking forward to that occasionally, because your district, kind of got a little wet. You had some flooding and some portions of State Highway 10 closed and things like that.
Absolutely. They got, you know, there were several places over there that I've talked to people that said they got up to 7 inches of rain.
That's the report that we saw, yeah.
Telling you earlier that I was in Oklahoma City, and we went all the way to the west side of the state there one day and came back, and I was trying to watch Oklahoma City weather, and we were just, of course, the corner of the map. You can't really see what's going on, so I went back up to the Capitol and stayed up there till almost 11 o'clock that night, where I could watch the radar and watch the Emergency Management Service and visit with them and kind of stay in touch with what was going on. And it just kept raining and kept raining and kept raining.
I hear you. Well, at least it did stop. We're not in day 39 or 40 here. So,
yeah.
But I also want to welcome to the program by way of the telephone Representative Daryl Fincher. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Charlie. How are you doing this morning?
It's a pretty good day in the neighborhood. I'd almost say beautiful, but I'm not sure that I'm getting tired of clouds, so just subjectively, I'm ready for some sunshine. But nice to talk to you this morning.
Nice to talk to you. It's a little cloudy down here. I'm sorry I couldn't be up there in person, but there are several of us who are going out to the prison of McAllister to tour that and learn more about our criminal justice and Department of Corrections issues.
Well, I think that's important. I had Washington County Sheriff on for Community Connection last hour, and we were talking, of course, about the sales tax extension vote that will be coming up for that next month for Washington County voters. Whether it's a state prison or whether it's the county jail, what we do with the people that the police departments bring into the justice system is important.
Absolutely. You know, and even one of the things you learn is how much interaction goes on between our police departments and the prison. We, you know, just ended up passing a bill where we actually make it clear who's responsible for transporting prisoners when they go from our county jail to our Department of Corrections and who pays the bill for that, because that wasn't that clear before.
Well, and I'm sure the taxpayers don't always know for sure. By the way, who does pay the bill?
We're actually trying to make sure that it does go to the Department of Corrections and that they actually do the transportation. Before, while the sheriffs could take it, they could get some reimbursement, but sometimes they didn't have the personnel or anything else, and I'm not sure that the reimbursement always made it in.
Well, I think that's something that the sheriff was talking about at least a little bit, that whether he is picking up someone from, let's say, Lawton, or whether he has to go to some other state and bring someone in because they were arrested in, I don't care, Tennessee, but now they're being tried on a Washington County crime. Somebody has to go get them and bring them back here, and that means that the sheriff is without that deputy for 1, 2, 3, however many days it takes to go get the individual and bring them back here.
That is correct. And there's also the whole issue of, we were talking about prisons. There's also the issue when they do arrest somebody who perhaps is having some mental health issues and some mental health challenges. For several types of help, it's not very close to take them to an appropriate medical facility. And so, especially if they're juvenile, and so then the sheriff deputies can be gone or the police officer can be gone for quite a while. And you're without that coverage for the amount of time it takes to get back there, which can be hours or a day.
If it's out of state or out of the area, it might even be, maybe a couple of days before that officer is back. I'm going to continue this topic with you a little bit later on, but since I've got Mr. Strom in the studio, I want to get back to him just for a moment. And I know that while you didn't have any bills of yours that were being heard in committee work, particularly conference committee, got a good running start this week.
Yeah, we did. When everything that we send over to the Senate that we've passed off the floor, they have the right to amend and then send back. And so what we've done is all of the representatives now are bringing their bills back up, and they're either accepting or rejecting those amendments. And if you accept amendments, like as I've done on my own bills, they'll go on to the governor. If you reject them, those have to go on to conference committee. And people have been working all week to get those on the list, on the line, and into committee and get them heard. Most people, I think, so far have accepted a lot of the amendments. And there are, don't tell Julie I said this, don't tell Senator Daniels I said this, but some of the amendments, such as some of the ones on mine, do improve the bills or have helped some of the bills, and we've worked on those and come into agreements. So they slide through pretty easy. But ultimately, as I didn't have any of my own to work, I've still been running the halls and lobbying for quite a few bills, and especially, I mean, we've got these, like Mr. Fincher's headed down there, we've been working on criminal justice, we've been working on mental health, several mental health bills that we can look at that. You know, maybe this person's just not a criminal. They're having other problems that they're trying to get through, and we want to be able to help them with that and recognize that. Because it's no secret that Oklahoma had the largest incarceration rate for men and women. And part of that, when we stepped back and looked to see what we were doing versus what other states were doing, was we were incarcerating people for longer. We were incarcerating people for everything rather than trying to get them the help that they needed so that they could actually make a better life or really straighten up on their own or learn the right direction to go rather than just locking them up and throwing away the key.
And that came out, I think, at least I tried to bring it out during the campaign with representative candidates and also with executive branch candidates. There was a time, particularly in the 80s, where the state seemed to be wanting to impose a high penalty on several things as what they hoped would be a deterrent. If I'm going to go to jail for, I don't care, 20 years on this, maybe I want to think about it and not do it. It didn't work out that way, but I think that was the intent at the time.
Well, and we're starting to recognize, too, if 20 years wasn't a deterrent, 25 years maybe not be a deterrent. If they just kept making the penalties larger and larger, well, yeah. they still weren't deterrent.
Yeah.
And so now we have to get back and look at the root is, why is this person doing that? You know, what can we do to help them to not convince them, but to kind of show them the better way or lead them in the right direction rather than, like I say, yeah. just locking them up for
well,
so long.
Well, I'll get Mr. Fincher back in on this. You've heard what we've been talking about. I'd like to ask you to continue that discussion with me for a minute or so, if you would, please.
Well, yeah, one of the things that I think struck us is there's a belief that the jail sentences are a deterrent. But you talk to people who are in criminal justice reform, you talk to police officers, sheriff officers, and you find that a lot of the acts are not premeditated. They tend to be impulsive. They tend to be spur of the moment. And then when you get into addiction and those whole other issues, that's what really becomes a problem. And I think one of our mistakes that we made back in the 80s that has kind of carried on, and hopefully we're going to undo that, was that if you were taking illegal drugs and you were addicted, we just arrested you, locked you up, and your treatment was that you didn't have any access to it. The problem was it didn't actually help the underlying cause of why do you end up addicted to drugs? What are the other issues? If we can break that, then you drive the requirements or you reduce the requirements for the drugs, which is the classic method of how do we actually support or why would people go out and sell drugs? It's because there's a demand. If we can reduce the demand, that reduces the number of people that end up in prison. So we need to be able to treat them and have them continue to be productive citizens here in Oklahoma.
And I realize there was certainly a couple of ballot initiatives that would just look at criminal justice reform, which is one of the several reasons I think you're doing it now. Are you finding what you hope will be items that can eventually be crafted into a solution and move the state forward within the next, I don't know, 3 to 5 years?
I am. There's one that's got a lot of, you may have seen some press on it, which was actually had to do with bail reform to really do a lot more on recognizant releases. Now, I got a lot of people calling in saying, oh, you'll let criminals out on the street, they'll be unsafe. But what it boiled down to is people weren't actually showing up. You know, they've got some statistics showing that sometimes low-level offenders don't necessarily show up for their initial court date. Many of them still do. And so the question is, how do we differentiate them? How do we balance out, you know, any potential harm of letting somebody who's just been arrested and hasn't actually been adjudicated against keeping them in jail? Because part of the problem is when you're kept in jail, even if it's overnight or for a day, you end up sometimes losing your job, and then it becomes a downward spiral. And even in Washington County, there have been several examples of that. So that's something that I'm hopeful we can actually negotiate, and that's in a joint conference committee right now. Just as an aside, on the joint conference committees, if you do it right as a representative and your bill ends up in joint conference, it doesn't necessarily have to come out and back to session this year. There's a procedural maneuver you can use that will keep it alive so you can bring it up next year. which then basically gives you the entire space between May and the beginning of session in February to actually go through and negotiate that. So hopefully we'll be able to do something good on some of these criminal justice bills, or we may not hear this session, but they'll be ready next session.
And I wanted to just take this one step further because I know it's also concerning a lawsuit here in Washington County. Bond amounts, sometimes a person is brought in and sometimes the judge will set bond, maybe because of what the judge considered as proper bond, sometimes because maybe bond was set as a condition in statute, and the individual simply, you know, can't pay the bond. And like you said, then they lose their job because they're stuck in jail. So I'm sure bond amounts are going to have to be part of what you're looking at in this discussion as well. Is that right?
Well, that is correct. The bond amount is also a discussion. I think one of the things I've had when I've talked to some attorneys is often the judge will, you know, in some areas will determine the ability of the person, if they are able to pay the bond, might be $200 or $300. Well, they've got the money, then they don't need to be appointed a defense attorney. Just because people are able to show up and scrape together $200 or $300, put a bond together, does not mean that they've got the money to hire a defense attorney. That could be a $3,000 bond if they're getting into a bail's bond person. And so one of the things that we'd be looking at is when the judge is looking at whether a person actually needs a public defender, is to not consider whether their capability to pay the bond, but their overall financial ability that they actually have.
That makes good sense. Judd, you're listening to this discussion. Anything you want to kick in on that too?
I agree wholly with the reforms on our bond issues. You know, the term that gets thrown around quite a bit at the Capitol is that we've kind of created a debtor's prison system. You take someone that doesn't have $7 in their pocket, now you charge them $1,000, $3,000, $4,000, and they can't pay that and they can't get back in. And it just throws them into kind of a vicious cycle right there, that now we've made them even more of a criminal because they were poor. You know, or because they couldn't afford that. And so we've thrown them into this cycle that really was our fault doing that. You know, if they can't show back up or they can't pay those fines and fees.
Or at least the fault of a prior legislature anyway. It's probably not
your
two fault. But yeah. what's on the likely agenda over the next week for the legislature? You're getting down to crunch time now.
Really right now, I mean, ultimately, the budget. The budget is one of the biggest issues going on right now, and it's kind of the buzz and what everyone's up and down the hallways trying to figure out is who's gonna give a little bit. The Senate and the House really had very close numbers on everything. I mean, they were even if they were different, they were right there close, and we could work those. Well, now the governor has come in with what his numbers he'd like to see, and of course they were a little different than ours. So we were coming together, and then you get thrown a curveball, and you kind of, you know, get back to the plate and go back to work. So that's been interesting, and we're trying to make sure that we can get money into education. We're trying to make money. We make sure that we can get money into where we can support our elderly, where we can add to and support our criminal justice system. We're trying to get money back to the counties. We had a bill the other day that just brought, what was it, $30 million back for county roads and bridges programs. And that was one of those things that we wanted to see in there that used to be there that we'd pulled back as the economy turned down. Well, now that the economy's coming back around, we're trying to get that back in the right place.
Okay. Mr. Fincher, again, the next week, and we're talking budget, but I'll go anywhere you want to go.
Yeah, the budget is actually the big thing, and I think there were a couple of sticking points. You've heard about the teacher pay raise versus what's called putting in the formula. Well, the secret is everything goes in the formula. The question is, do we have a teacher pay raise that's restricted so you actually have to use part of the money that you're given to give a pay raise to every other teacher, or is it totally unrestricted so that, you know, you don't have to give a pay raise, but you can if you want to? If we're going to stay in the top 10, here in the House, we feel it's really necessary to give the pay raise, and the governor campaigned on that, and this number is his number. There's some other things that are going on there. They're trying to make it non-mandatory, but what will end up happening is with all the other states around us increasing the pay, we're going to see a lot more in there. And so the pay raise is going to be an issue. Another one is how much are we actually going to put in the savings account? The governor wants to put a lot more away, and so that's going to be open to negotiation.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact number, but I think it was something Oklahoma jumped from like 49 to 32 or something like that in teacher pay raise. I may have the numbers off a little bit, but it was a significant jump. Josh, I know you were right on that number. Or Judd, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I think it took us to 34. Where it put us.
We're right there.
Yeah.
So, again, gentlemen, I'm looking at the clock, and I don't want to overstay my welcome with either one of you. And I know you're on the phone, Mr. Fincher. But I'll say thank you for reporting in. Anything we did not cover that you feel it's important that we cover with the listeners this morning? Mr. Fincher?
No, I think we pretty well covered it. Thank you so much. It's been great. And thank you to Phillips 66 for sponsoring this.
Thank you very much. And, Judge, same thing. Anything we didn't talk about?
I think we're all looking forward to winding this session up. Okay. We've been down there and we just all ran a million miles. And I tell people all the time, this is the least physical job I've ever had, but by far the most exhausting, trying to get everything covered and be everywhere you're supposed to be and learn as much as you can and get around. We thought maybe if we could get the budget done, we'd be done by the 10th, and then it was backed up to the 17th, and now we'll probably get that other week on. So,
yeah, not unusual. I understand how it feels, I think I do anyway.
Yeah.
Thank you both for calling in this morning. Hope to have both of you back face-to-face next week for another Capital Call, and Senator Daniels, I'm sure, will be alongside as well. That's Capital Call on a Friday morning, brought to you this morning on K1 by Phillips 66.
At Phillips 66, we don't fuel vehicles. We fuel work trips and grocery trips and